I wanted to welcome you again, and this morning is going to be an interactive workshop that we're going to have on stop announcement programs. What I mean by that, stop announcement programs, is the calling out of stops on buses and trains. And we've invited representatives from two of our transit agencies in California to talk about what they're doing and the reasons they're doing it, or why they may not be doing certain things in their programs. They represent the big urban area as well as the urban-rural area in California. Special thanks has to go to organizing this to Mitch Pomerantz, who made contact with the local people and was able to solicit the help of Chip Hazen, the ADA compliance officer for the Los Angeles County Metropolitan Transit Authority, who is a member of the board of CALACT, California Association of Coordination of Transportation, what a mouthful. And Chip, despite the fact of trying to get prepared for going through some major surgery,
Yeah.
And I'm not moving the mic.
Gene, do you have a wired or wireless?
I'm wireless.
It's wireless.
Swap me.
Can I say what you want to try this one?
Okay.
It's wired.
Okay. Thank you. Testing, testing. Okay. Again, Chip Hazen worked closely with Jackie Montgomery, the executive director of CALACT, and got our presentation put together. And so I want to thank all those parties for assisting us. The reason we're having it, to give you background, is that, as you know, the ADA's required this since about 1992, that it stops are to be announced. And as you will be hearing from our speakers later, there are certain stops that it is the U.S. Department of Transportation say that have to be called out, and it's still in vague terms. I have talked to people on the national and state and local levels from transit agencies and organizations representing them, and they have expressed frustration over the lack of guidance they've gotten from the U.S. Department of Transportation, and they've had to then start developing their own guidelines, and sometimes they've been inconsistent with other transit districts and inconsistent with our needs. They have also begun to recognize that they need to include us in the process, since we're the end users, and there's other passengers who benefit from, not just persons with visual impairments. So they have started to set up working groups. One of them, and I'm sitting on a working group, is for the American Public Transportation Association, and they are drafting recommended practices. They are then, of course, the local agencies, and I believe from what Chip has shared with me, the CALACT has been struggling with this issue too. So they are recognizing that we can contribute, we're the end users, good customer service, and have been asking for our input. I'm hoping that we can then, this morning, start identifying what are the things that we want that can be included in the resolution and possibly later on a white paper, a position paper that we might be able to do either ourselves or jointly with perhaps CALACT. I have also drafted a resolution on this subject. This is just the portion to do with calling out the stops based on input that I've gotten from visually impaired persons around the country and some transit agencies. It's a rough draft. It's not something to say that this is the answer, this is what we're supposed to do, but it might be, if we find a little later in our discussions, need something to react to, respond to, that we have that. And before I introduce our panelists, I'm going to ask Bernice Kandirian if she may have any opening comments she'd like to make on this. Bernice?
Thank you, Gene. First of all, I want to welcome all the people from the Council of Citizens with Low Vision, and thank Gene for getting together this excellent program this morning. Gene, I just wanted to tell you that when I lived in Los Angeles, which was some years ago, I learned my way around the city because bus drivers were very good about calling bus stops. Of course, we had Casey DeLint on their case in those days. And I also wanted to share with you that in Santa Clara County, our stop, which Roger often requests to be let off at Rangsdorf, the drivers keep passing it by and taking them way down the road. And there were enough complaints that they put Rangsdorf on the paddle of one of the, as one of the stops that they have to call, and it's now on the automated annunciator. So there are ways of solving some problems.
Okay. Thank you. We have this morning our there's been a change in our panel in that one of our panelists, because of work-related responsibilities, was unable to attend. However, we still have two other panelists, excellent panelists. And the first one is Steve Rank, who is the Assistant Operations Control Manager for the Los Angeles County Metropolitan Transit Authority. For those of you in Southern California, that was the predecessor was Southern California Rapid Transit District. And I don't know, prior to that, it might have been the LAMTA. I can't keep up with the acronyms. Mr. Rank has been with the company for many years, I believe 1982, and started as a driver and worked his way up. So he definitely has operations experience firsthand, knows what it's like to deal with the public there in the seat, and now is in a position of being able to make some of the changes. Also, we have with us Lori Brown, who is the Director of Transportation for San Joaquin's Rapid Transit District. We just met this morning. Unfortunately, didn't have an opportunity to find out much about her background, but I believe she has been with the Transit District a number of years and has responsibilities in the area of dealing with stop announcements and others overall with the operation of her district. I believe that the district also received an award for an annual award for their stop announcement program. And I believe that might have been last year. And so both she'll be able to correct me and fill us in about these things. So I think I'll start off right now and ask if Mr. Rank would first speak, and then Ms. Brown. Okay, let's give them a hand of welcome first.
Thank you, Gene, and thank you to everybody for being here. It's very nice to be with you this morning. Gene got the biographical stuff pretty good. I have been with MTA, and before that it was called RTD, Rapid Transit District, for 25 years, starting in 1982. That means I get an extra week of vacation every year starting this year. My 25th anniversary date was last week.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
2 weeks, do you?
Yeah, now I get 2 weeks every year of vacation. It only took 25 years. I did start out driving the bus. Started out in 1982 working in a division out of West Hollywood. I drove pretty much every route we have, and that's a lot of routes. I worked at three different divisions. I've driven everywhere from the inner city, Watts, Compton, to Beverly Hills and Pacific Palisades. I drove for 7 years, so I really saw the system from the ground level. And after 7 years, I was desperate to get out of that operator's seat, I can tell you. Tired of fighting with passengers over fares and dealing with traffic and all the other things. So I went into supervision. I've been a division dispatcher. I've been an instructor teaching basic students coming in how to operate the bus and how to deal with the public. I've been a radio dispatcher, a road supervisor. I'm currently assistant manager of bus operations control. And bus operations control is kind of the nerve center of MTA. It's, well, first of all, there's bus operations control and there's rail operations control. In rail, they talk to all the operators of the trains and they handle the mechanics and technicians that keep the trains running. We do the same thing for the bus side. And our system for keeping track of all those buses is also tied into that system is also our stop annunciator. I'll just give you some of the numbers. We have 2,700 approximately, 2,700 buses in our fleet. Most of them are fairly new, probably 2,300 of them have been purchased within the last 5 or 6 years. We've just about replaced our full fleet. We have about 150 ancient, decrepit RTS-type buses that are still out there. Every month they tell me that this is the last month they'll be out there, and they're retiring them, but there's still about 150 of them out there. We have 191 different routes. And those routes serve 18,000-plus bus stops. And on an average day, our buses board 1.25 million people. And before we had the automatic system to announce the stops, we relied on our operators to do it. And I would be lying if I told you that compliance was very good among the operators. Chip Hazen asked me to do a survey and see how we were doing with calling the stops. And I sent 10 supervisors out for about 2 weeks to do nothing but ride buses. And they were to be in plain clothes, so they weren't supposed to look like supervisors and tip the operators off. They were wearing plain clothes, and they went out and rode every one of our routes. And all they did was keep track of whether or not the operator was calling the stops that were required. And that was in 2001 or 2002, and our compliance was about 35 to 40%. It was well under half of our operators were calling their stops. And as a result of finding out that little piece of information, we made a couple of changes. We strengthened the rule in the rule book. We changed the training that the operators were receiving, and we elevated the violation of the rule to a major rule violation. And what that means, it was no longer something that you'd get a little caution slip in your mailbox. The first time you got a written remark in your personnel file, and after that, if it was repeated, you could get more serious discipline up to and including where it affected your pocketbook, where you could be suspended for days. So let me tell you what our current rule is and what our current training to our operators is before I go into talking about the AVA system and how it works and what it's supposed to do. I'm reading to you from our operator standard operating procedure book, and it says, Rule 7.03, calling stops. The operator is responsible for knowing how to use the automatic voice enunciation system and using it to announce the street names along a route. In the event that the automatic voice enunciation system is not operational, the operator must make announcements in a clear, distinct voice. If available, a public address system must be used. Federal regulations require the announcement of all transfer points, major intersections, and destination points, all points of interest, and any stop or location upon request. So I think there's where some of the ambiguity that Gene was talking about comes in. What's a destination point? If I'm going to that corner over there, that's a destination point. What's a major stop? What's a point of interest? You know, Universal Studios, that's a point of interest. Hollywood and Highland, that's a point of interest. But anything else can be a point of interest. So there is a lot of ambiguity in what ADA actually requires in terms of calling stops. So let me tell you how our enunciator system works. In 2004, we finally put our enunciator system online. It's on every one of our buses except for some of the very old ones that are about to be retired. I think out of our 2,700 buses in the active fleet, over 2,500 of them are equipped with the AVA system. It's part of a system called ATMS. We love the acronyms in the transportation industry, just like the military. ATMS stands for Advanced Transportation Management System. It's the system that I use and the 60 controllers that work for me use in the control center to keep track of where buses are, whether they're running on schedule, whether they're on the assigned route where they're supposed to be, whether they have a call into the dispatch center concerning an emergency or anything like that on board the bus. ATMS, in large part, is based on the global positioning satellites, which means that any time I need to, I can punch in a bus number at my computer in the control center, and a map will pop up on my screen, and it'll show me where that bus is. Every 15 seconds, it'll pull the bus's position, and it will update the bus as it moves. So I can see if the bus is standing or moving. I can see which direction it's going. I can find out if it's on schedule, if it's on or off the prescribed route. And all that is done through the GPS. So the GPS is also what controls the AVA announcements. When we started out, we went out and we surveyed every route, and we decided, okay, this point right here is where we want the bus to announce the next stop. Maybe it would be mid-block or 200 yards before you get to the stop. You plug in an exact latitude and longitude coordinate for that spot, and then the bus goes by the spot, and it triggers the announcement, and the announcement is something like now approaching La Cienega Boulevard and Manchester. And we usually have them set to announce about mid-block. It's not perfect. What we had to do when we first set it up, I had six people going around driving every single route and listening to the announcements and trying to make all the corrections. If you were off by one digit in the coordinates that you gave the GPS satellite, of course, the stop would announce too early or too late. Maybe it would announce after you had already left the stop, which doesn't do anybody too much good. Or maybe it would not announce a particular stop. Or maybe the actor that we hired the voiceover guy to read the announcements didn't know how to pronounce the stop. I had to send them back and have them do over certain ones. Sepulveda Boulevard was Sepulveda. So there were a lot of them because this guy was sitting in a sound lab in Baltimore, Maryland, and probably never been in Los Angeles in his life. So there were issues of pronunciation, of announcements that weren't audible, of stops that were announced backwards, or, you know, so we sent out, we did a long shakedown process that took about a year. And in June 2004, we thought the system was good enough that we could put it online. So for the past, well, it's been 3 years now, all our buses announced the stops. And our policy is real simple. We don't worry about what's a major stop or a point of interest or a destination point. Our bus just announces every stop that's a scheduled stop on the line. Now that I've said that, no, the system is not perfect, and there are stops that still don't get announced, but we have a process in place for trying to fix those things. There's a regular form that an operator is supposed to fill in when he comes into the division if he notices that a stop is not announcing correctly, or if the equipment on the bus is not working correctly, if it's a particular bus that doesn't announce stops, or if it's a particular route where the stop announcements are in error. He's supposed to let us know. Then we send out a technician, and we try to correct the problem. So the way it works is it makes an announcement on the inside of the bus all the time. The announcement on the inside of the bus is next stop Manchester and Crenshaw. It also scrolls across an LED screen for people who are deaf or hard of hearing so that they can see next stop is Manchester and Crenshaw. When somebody rings the bell or pulls the cord or pushes the button to signal that they want to get off at a stop, there's an audible announcement that says stop requested to inform the operator. There's also a light that comes on the instrument panel of the bus that says next stop requested. There's also a scrolling LED message that goes across the same screen that tells you what the next stop is. It says the next stop has been requested. That's on the inside of the bus, and that works 24/7. That's always on. On the external announcements, which some people need to know which bus is coming into the stop, because maybe there's five or six different buses that stop at that particular stop, the external announcement says the line number of the bus and the destination. Because if you ride transit, you know, not all buses go to the end of the line. There's short lines. There's variations in routes. So the external announcement is something like Line 20, Wilshire Boulevard, and Westwood. And it makes that announcement just as it pulls into the stop. And it's supposed to make the announcement just as the operator opens the doors as it comes into the stop. That system we can't have on 24 hours a day. We currently have it set to operate between 9 a.m. and 6 p.m., and that's because of community objections to us making noise in their neighborhoods, which seems a little facetious to me because most of our routes don't operate through residential neighborhoods. Mostly they're in industrial or business neighborhoods where there's plenty of ambient noise going on, and we have them set to a decibel level that's predetermined by FTA for us. So I'm a little skeptical about why we have to turn them off at 6 o'clock at night, and I'm pushing for them to extend those hours at least until maybe 8 or 9 o'clock. You know, there's not that many people that are in bed and trying to sleep by 6 o'clock in the evening. So let me see.
Yes, sir. Let me just ask you a question, and not to try to open things, but just a clarification.
Okay.
When you do stop those exterior announcements, does the driver then take over and make the announcements, which would be at a lower level? For clarification.
Yes, the external announcements, the operator is required to announce as he comes into a stop if there is a person there with an obvious visual impairment. However, I know it's not always visible that somebody has a visual impairment. So he is required, if he sees somebody with a guide dog or if he sees somebody with a cane and it's obvious that the person is visually impaired, then he is supposed to make the announcement as he comes into the stop and opens the door. He's supposed to say the same thing that the external speaker would say. This is line 111. I'm going to Manchester and whatever.
Thank you. I just wanted that for clarification.
Okay.
Sorry.
So we do have the backup in the rule that if there's anything wrong with the AVA system and it's not making the stop announcements, the operator is required to make the stop announcements. It is, as I said, it's been elevated to the level of an ADA violation if the operator fails to do so, which puts it automatically into the realm of major violations that can lead to serious discipline. Let me see, what else can I tell you about it? I'm sure there's probably people in the room that know more than me about ADA law, but what ADA law says is that announcements must be made at sufficient intervals along the route to help customers, including those with visual impairments or other disabilities, to reach their destinations. And therein lies the ambiguity that Gene talked about. Other features of the system, I can tell you the limitations that we've discovered with AVA. The biggest challenge for us is that every 6 months we look at all our routes and we trim service where it's not needed or not being used. We add service where we don't have enough buses online. We adjust all our routes every 6 months, and that's when we put new lines into effect. That's when we do new short lines and turnarounds and all that kind of things. Every time we do that, we have to reprogram everything in AVA, because the way it works is an operator gets on the bus and he logs on electronically, and by him putting his badge number in, the ATMS system knows what his assignment is for that day, and from that it knows what that bus is supposed to do for that day. So he has what's called a running board to follow, which tells him every route he's supposed to take, what time, and all that stuff. So when we make changes to the system, we have to do some reprogramming to ATMS. We try to get it done before the shakeup takes effect. There's a period of about 3 weeks between the time all the changes are finalized and all the changes are actually happening on the street. And at times we may lose a week or so because just a massive amount of computer reprogramming. So we may have some buses calling inaccurate stops for that time. Another limitation is that AVA only knows the regular scheduled route for that bus. If the bus has to take a detour due to filming or construction or a fire or police activity, once the bus goes off route, the AVA automatically turns off because it doesn't pass the next expected latitude, longitude coordinate, and it knows the bus is now off route. So when it comes back onto route and it picks up that it is on the correct route, then it will start announcing again automatically. But anytime the bus is on an unscheduled detour, AVA is not functional. So that's everything I know about AVA. I'm not an electrical engineer, and I couldn't get one to come with me today to explain the technical aspects, but I figured that's really not what you guys wanted to hear. You wanted to hear about what it is and what it does, and so that's my piece. Here you go, Jane.
Thank you. Now I'd like to introduce Ms. Lori Brown.
Good morning. I'm honored to be here and speak with you. I will give you a little bit of my biography since Gene and I didn't have a chance to get together ahead of time. I've been in transportation for 33 years. Like Steve, I started as a coach operator in Sacramento, California at Sacramento RT. And then worked my way through the ranks as first a supervisor, then a lead supervisor, then an operations manager. My career took me to Foothill Transit in Southern California in 1997 as operations manager, and then to Kern County as general manager of the Kern County Regional Transit System. I was then recruited by MV Transportation to be a regional vice president of operations in Northern California, where my children reside, which was a pretty strong pull. And I love Northern California, so I went back up there. And after a few years with MV, which I truly enjoyed, but had 14 divisions spread over a huge geographical area. I was driving about 1,500 miles a week in addition to working about 80 hours a week. I had the opportunity to join San Joaquin RTD, where I've been for about 3 years as director of transportation. It is the sort of the antithesis of LAMTA. We have a lot of benefits because we are so much smaller, and we have some challenges because we are so much smaller. We would love to have the ATMS system that Steve just designed, but in fact we have about 163 buses, a little over 200 operators. We do have two divisions. One operates primarily the county services, which is the commuter express, which goes to the Bay Area and Sacramento from Stockton, the intercity service, which connects the cities in San Joaquin County, the hopper service, which is a deviated fixed route service for the county, and ADA dial ride services. The other division is the Metro division, which operates our new bus rapid transit system, Metro Express, the Stockton Metropolitan service, and the trolley service. So now you know about me and about where I'm from. I'd like to speak with you a little bit about how we address the important issue of stop announcements. I do think it's important for people like Steve and I to have had some experience as a coach operator, because there's no substitute for having been in the field and seeing the challenges that a lot of our customers have in trying to use our service. You can learn it. You certainly can come from the outside and learn it. But having experienced it really helps raise your level of awareness and sensitivity and commitment to compliance with the laws and regulations and you understand the reason for the regulations. At San Joaquin, we try to take, I call it a holistic approach to ADA announcements. We do not have automated announcement except on a very few buses. So we involve everybody from the CEO to the customers in training and monitoring ADA announcements. Gene was right. We were very honored to receive the Cal Act Outstanding Operation Award for 2006. And that was partly because of our program for compliance with ADA. At the beginning of initial operator training, we do overall sensitivity training. We have a committee at San Joaquin RTD called the Accessible Services Advisory Committee, who meets once a month and brings us information on how they perceive our service delivery and things that our customers believe we could do to make things better, make our service more accessible and more readily usable. And we're very fortunate in that those committee members volunteer to come and help train the operators so that the operators can fully understand the importance of complying with the regulations. Part of that training is a blindfolded exercise where the trainees are blindfolded and required to board, ride, and alight buses. They take a trip where announcements, with their blindfolds on, they take a trip where announcements are not being made, and then they take a trip where announcements are being made so that they can feel the difference of their own orientation. And then there's follow-up discussion comparing those two trips to try to make sure that the lesson is learned. When they've completed their behind-the-wheel training, their classroom and behind-the-wheel training, they move into a phase of training called cadetting. That's where they go out on routes that are in service, and they may drive or they may ride, but they learn a lot about the service delivery, about fare collection. And during that period of cadetting, when they're riding every route, it's the cadet's responsibility to announce the stops. They may be driving and announce the stops, or they may be riding and announce the stops, but the goal is to get them into the habit of you wouldn't fail to call out a stop any more than you would fail to stop at a red light. It is part of driving your bus. And so we try to instill that from the very beginning. We also review our operator handbook with them, very much like Steve's. We have a section on ADA compliance. Announcements are 8.7, and there are disciplinary penalties that the operators are made aware of. We update their initial training with annual training. There's a segment, as you probably are aware, coach operators are required to receive annual training of at least 8 hours in order to maintain their licenses. And so we make a segment of that annual training, a repeat of the sensitivity with the blindfold exercise, and have a discussion with our AAC members on ADA laws, make sure that the operators are aware of the most recent decisions, any updates, and our customers' perception of our discussion, of our performance. We try to, as a management team, make sure that we provide a lot of support for our coach operators in helping them understand the importance of compliance with this regulation. We do have a few buses that have automated announcements, and the operators fight over who gets those. We're working very hard on updating our entire fleet. We're working with Siemens on a program that will create announcements. We're going to have to replace some equipment. We had an old system that never really worked properly to announce the stops, and so that old equipment is going to have to come out. Some of the other buses have equipment, but the software doesn't work with it yet, and so I would say we're about 2 years away from being fully automated. So what we have done to try and support until we have this automated announcement program is, as you probably are aware, the coach operators have to have with them a list of what we call rights and lefts, tells them where to turn. On the rights and lefts, we have bolded the locations where the operator must call out the stop or the point of interest. At the end of that document, for some routes, it's a thick document, depending on how many unusual short turns or trips that it has. At the end, there's a summary, so that there's one place where they can go and see all of the stops that must be called. We recently rolled out, in addition to that program, a laminated flashcard that the operator can clip onto the fare box, and then they can just flip it over for the reverse direction of that route to tell them every route that must be called, and then, of course, in addition, anything that is requested. We have a couple of routes where we are able to announce every stop because there are limited numbers of stops, 5 to 8 stops on the route from one end to the other. But doing verbal announcements, asking an operator to announce every single stop could be difficult. That's one of the reasons we want to get automated as soon as we can. we have our supervisors send radio and MDT, mobile data transit information, all calls to the operators to remind them to call out their stop. Every time an operator calls in to report that they've loaded a 10-300, a passenger in a wheelchair, we say 10-4, thank you for reporting, and make sure you call out all your stops. We send out a text message. They do have the MDT mobile data terminal. We send out, make sure you call out all your stops. We have staff assigned ride checks. The CEO rides, I ride, all of the directors ride, the supervisors and lead supervisors ride. And we have, of course, posted notices advising operators of requirements. At San Joaquin RTD, we have a system called Task Teams, and we're very proud of it. The premise is involve the employees in the decision-making process so that they have buy-in, we make smarter decisions, and we stay all on the same page. Our executive task team specifically focuses on ADA compliance, among a few other things, and they assist us by going out and riding the buses and sharing with coach operators feedback that we've received and how important this stop announcement and ADA compliance piece is. So that brings me to the enforcement portion of our ADA compliance regulations. Members of our Accessible Advisory Committee team ride our coaches regularly. The reason they're on our team is because they use our service all the time and they want us to know what they need and how we can help them, and they're willing to be part of the resolution. And when they ride a bus and the driver doesn't call out the stop, like I said, there are some benefits to being small. They know all the drivers by name, and they know my phone number, and they call me and they say, Don wasn't calling his stops this morning. And so then I pull the video, and I confirm we do have video cameras on about half of our fleet. So if there's a video, I pull the video, and I confirm, bring John in, have him sit down and look at his video and say, okay, John, explain to me why you weren't calling your stops. It doesn't take more than once for that operator to be so embarrassed that they would not let that happen to them again. And I've never yet had anybody give me a really good reason for not calling their stop. I have had a couple of operators call in and say, I have laryngitis, I could still work, but I can't announce stops. So if we're shorthanded, we say, okay, come to work, we'll make sure you get a bus that has automated announcements. If we're not shorthanded, we say, stay home, take care of yourself. I do have a secret shopper program where I've hired some people on a contract basis who are familiar with transit. Some of them are retired coach operators from the Sacramento area. Some of them are retired supervisors or managers from Modesto, Sacramento, you know, the cities that surround Stockton. And they're very reliable sources. And so they ride for me and they tell me very candidly exactly how well the operators are complying with our processes. We then, if we do have progressive discipline for failure to comply, but we try to also really focus on rewarding excellence in the area of sensitivity. So if a coach operator gets a ride check where they were calling out their stops and they did everything, they operated safely and they were courteous to their passengers and they did everything that we expect them to do, they get what we call a perfect check. And if they get three perfect checks, they get a day off with pay. And they also get a little pin when they get their day off with pay that says perfect check pioneer, and the operators really covet that pin, and I'm proud to say most of our operators are walking around with that pin on their collar. The progressive discipline is the same as Steve's. It starts with a warning and progresses to suspension and termination if they don't comply. I've never had anybody fail to comply. As a matter of fact, I've only ever once had to suspend an operator, because once you bring them in, show them their video, tell them how important it is, tell them what they may have created by not doing what they were supposed to do, they're usually very eager to comply after that. So in summary, I would say, again, we at San Joaquin RTD, we try to take a holistic approach. We involve everybody from the CEO to the customers. I feel very, very fortunate that we have customers who are willing to come in and actually help train our operators. It makes a big difference when people in the community who rely on the announcements for orientation come in and speak. The operators hear and they understand. And I would like to just share one story with you. We had a passenger who was fairly new in her area. She was totally blind. And we had a coach operator who was brand new on a route. She didn't pick the route. She's not an extra board operator, so she wouldn't normally be familiar with all the routes, but we were very shorthanded, and so we asked her if she could drive this route. She misread her route instructions, got off track. Of course, we don't have the automated systems. And stopped and let our passenger off where she thought the passenger had told her she wanted off. Our passenger then was in an area strange to her. Didn't know. She started walking the direction she thought she was supposed to and didn't find the roadmap items that she would normally find. Started walking the other direction, thinking maybe she had gone the wrong way, didn't find, and fortunately had my phone number because of the time that I had ridden the bus and handed out my cards, called me. And she was very frightened, and it was a horrible situation for her to have gone through, and it was mortifying to me that we had put her in that position. I was able to jump in my car and go get her. It was only about 15 minutes away from my office where she was, and pick her up and take her home. Now, she could have chosen to take legal action. She absolutely could have. She had a right. She chose instead to be part of the resolution, set up an appointment, and attended 8 subsequent training sessions with coach operators, and actually sat in on the discipline hearing for the coach operator. And I had operators come up to me after the training session and say that, you know, operators that have been there a long time, 25 years, said that's the best training session I've ever been to because the information was so honest and so contemporaneous and so forthright. It really resonated with the operators and made a big difference. And so I would just encourage all of you, if you have the opportunity, to become involved. Operators, coach operators, are usually doing that job because they like helping people. They're some of the best people in the world. I've been working with them for a very long time. Not that we don't have some that are problems and we have to address those problems, but mostly if we give them the ability to understand, they will do their very best to comply. So we begin at the time of hire and we continue throughout their career. We combine recognition and rewards with discipline. We keep our trainers up to date by sending them to NTI courses, having them work with the Accessible Advisory Committee, Project Action, and the Council for the Blind. And we try to, through a total program of constant awareness, make sure that we are in compliance with the ADA announcements.
Thank you very much. I think it's really encouraging for many of us to hear the representatives from 2 transit districts from Northern and Southern California that seem to be very progressive in wanting to serve us more. And also the fact that there's the idea of the inclusion of participation of the end user in the enforcement and the training of the drivers. I think that's another critical component. I'm also impressed with both districts, the fact that encouraging or seeking out people who have actually started as an operator. That makes a difference a lot in the attitude of the agency when you have people who have actually been there in the seat, deal with the customers and so forth. I know that was kind of an uncle of mine. Worked for San Francisco Muni back in the 50s and 60s, and he started as an operator and worked his way up to 3rd in command of the company. And he felt that it made a lot of difference of just having had that background. I think I'd like to start with, I'd like to ask a question to both of our speakers and then open it up for them. And that is to do with the announcements, the acceptance of the announcements either made by the operator or the actuator, the automated voice actuator. Of its acceptance over the last few years of the announcements being made. And I'll just preface that up, that I'm finding just firsthand in Sacramento that where there was some complaints initially, and I'm on the advisory committee to Sacramento Regional Transit, there don't seem to be the complaints. The community, people seem to be generally accepting the announcements of the stops being made on the bus. And I'm finding also that some of the newer drivers, and it has nothing to do with age, just maybe more trained, more less set in their ways, are actually getting involved in the announcements. We have some that actually announce every intersection. It makes a world of difference, and they really get into it. They really enjoy it. And it's not something that they're required to do. And one of their consultant, RT's consultant, thought I might have put some of these drivers up to it when he was out there monitoring them undercover, and I said, nope, this is them. So again, are you noticing how is it being accepted by the general public? Do you find that there's more acceptance, and do you think that is going to, the generally other agencies, my take on your approach of coming toward, working towards making every stop announcement? Who would like to start, Steve or Lori?
In my experience, I've never had anybody complain about announcements being made on the bus. Most people really appreciate them, and obviously it's not just of benefit to blind passengers or those with visual impairments. It's of benefit to everybody. especially in LA, we have a lot of tourists, a lot of people who are on the bus trying to get around, and they don't know the town. They're trying to find Hollywood Boulevard, or they're trying to find Disneyland or Universal Studios, and they're very dependent on those stop announcements. So it's as far as I've seen, it's completely accepted by our passengers. I've never heard a complaint.
Well, I have a little bit different experience. At the beginning, you know, because I've been in transportation for so long, I remember when this started and there were complaints at first. You know, why does the operator have to do that? It's just noise. But I have not heard any complaint like that, I would say, for at least 5 years, because people have adjusted. We have one exception, and that's our commuter service that goes to the Bay Area. Those people want to sleep. They do not want announcements. In our program of announcements, what we have done, the good news is the commuter services don't stop extremely frequently. And so what we do is we call the stops. We just don't call intersections and time points along the way. We call every stop where we are going to stop and pick up passengers or drop passengers off. But for the most part, yes, extremely big change in the perception of announcements in our general passengers. And I do think it helps everybody, if you're not familiar with the area, to know what stop you're coming in. I noticed when I was riding the bus last night coming from the airport, you know, I have no clue where I am. And there was an external announcement when we made the stops as to where we were going, but there was not an internal announcement. I thought it would have been very helpful if something on the bus had said, Terminal 1, Terminal 2, Terminal 4, we would have started to understand, okay, we're stopping at all the terminals before we go. And so I sat there riding with my eyes closed trying to envision what it would be like if I, you know, had no idea of my surroundings, and I thought it would have been helpful if there were more announcements.
My name is Rick Boggs. I just have a question about the association. Well, for one, I should say, I'm one who knows the city of Los Angeles very well and some other cities around the country, and I've learned the map of the city by riding buses and hearing stops called. I learned that primarily during the 80s, and I always find it, I can't in my own mind explain why, when there was no such thing, no technology available as automated systems back then, there was much less objection. It didn't seem as much of an imposition on a driver to ask them to call, but that being of what it is with the technology and times changing, that's fine. My question is for Ms. Brown. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Ms. Brown, is the are your coach operators affiliated with any particular union, transportation union? I know they are here locally in the MTA, and my question, Mr. Rankin, and to both of you then is, could each of you kind of answer, sort of describe for us what the relationship might be if there is a union affiliation, and does the transportation, do your respective companies communicate with the union and its membership about let's say this particular aspect of their training and the importance of calling stops, and what's the response and the relationship like?
That's a great question. I should have covered that. Yes, we our coach operators are represented by the Amalgamated Transit Union, Local 276, and we're sort of famous within California for having not a good relationship with the union. We're working hard to try and resolve that. One of the areas, however, that we don't have problems with the union is that the union president understands and accepts the requirements of ADA and actually supports the company. When I am required to discipline somebody, he will come in and tell the operator, you know, I can't help you if you don't comply with this rule. You must comply with the rule. And so I'm grateful for that.
Yes, sir. Our operators are represented by UTU, United Transportation Union, and as I said, when we did our initial survey back in 2001 and found that we were not doing very well in terms of complying with ADA and in terms of giving our passengers information about the location of the bus, we did elevate it to a major rule violation. And for us to do that, it required meeting with the president of the union, a gentleman named James Williams, and he brought all five of his local chairmen with him to that meeting. And we discussed several changes that we intended to make in the rule book regarding ADA. Part of it was calling stops. Part of it was the requirement to secure wheelchairs and to assist passengers in wheelchairs with boarding and alighting. There was a pretty substantial overhaul of our rules regarding a lot of ADA issues. And they were, for once, completely supportive of what the company was trying to do. I mean, we fight with all, we have five unions at MTA. So we have, our relationships with them are on a spectrum from, you know, good to not so good. But in that case, I have to say that that was one time where there was no opposition to what we were trying to do. And they understood that this was federal law. This was something that we have to do. And they were fully supportive of are making any changes that were necessary to the rules to get our operators to comply with the law and our own policies of what we expected in terms of customer service.
Next.
If I understood this right, one of you said that if a passenger boards with a wheelchair, that this fact has to be reported to somebody, I guess, the transit authority. I guess I'm about to try to get on a bus with a motorized wheelchair, so I'm curious to know the reason for this policy.
We have to report to the FTA the number of wheelchairs that we transport as part of our NTD reporting. We're working on an automated version of that so that the operator will not need to call and report. There will be a system where they can just push a button on their MDT and the information will be electronically transmitted into a report that we then can print. It'll be better for everybody. But for now, they have to call in where the person boards and where they alight.
And aside from the requirement to report when you're boarding or alighting wheelchair, we track all that data. We collect it and we track it to find out what routes and what locations do we board a lot of passengers with wheelchairs. We want to make sure that those routes are always served with accessible buses. When we first started counting and reporting, we found one line, the 18 line that runs on 6th Street, because it goes by several major hospitals and rehabilitation centers, we were boarding just an inordinate amount of wheelchairs there, and we were also having an inordinate amount of wheelchair pass-ups due to buses with inoperable lifts or buses arriving at the stop and already having all their wheelchair securement locations filled, so they had to pass passengers up. And as a result of that, we reworked our scheduling and reworked our bus assignments so that we solved that problem. So that's another reason why we report all the boardings and alightings.
Absolutely. And additionally, like Steve just said, for the routes, what we've learned by gathering that information, we have some routes that do carry a very large number of wheelchair users. And for that reason, those routes are given more recovery time so that each trip can start on time.
Yes, I have a question. I am a low vision user. I have some usable vision. This is for the MTA. Now, when I have some vision where I can see the bus signs, but it's great for the non-seaters, but when I try to read the signs, now some of the newer buses have the larger signs and the big orange lettering, but there's a lot of signs that don't have that, and yeah, you have to ask a driver, they can see the white cane, but are they ever going to retrofit some of the older buses, or what are they going to do? They're going to put newer signs up where they're large identification and the bright orange signs, because it's very hard, even out in the West Valley, or even in the back, they have the little numbers, and you can't see anything. When buses line up, you know, you have to be really quick to walk down and try to read a number before you can, you know, or else you'll be passed by. And also another question is, for the commuter buses, will you be having audible announcements just at least when you stop, like on the 573, this is with the DOT? And, you know, I'm just curious about some of these things.
Well, you're right about the head signs. There are three different styles of head signs that we have on our buses now. And the answer to your question is no, they won't be retrofitted. The old ones with the small lettering, those are just being phased out as the buses leave the road. In 2001, I believe, we switched over to the new larger lettering head signs. The company that makes our head signs is Luminator, and now they have come up with a new one that's even better. It's not only is it bigger, but it's also capable of displaying in different colors. So we're going to be able to determine, we're going to be able to distinguish different types of service by the color of the head sign. In other words, if it's a rapid bus, maybe it'll have a red head sign, you know, a bright red LED head sign. And if it's a freeway flyer, maybe it'll have a bright blue head sign or something like that. But there are 4 to 6 colors that we can use.
The background or the lettering?
No, I'm talking about the lettering itself.
You know, the Metro in Washington, D.C., the subway trains, used to have these wonderful signs. And you know, red is a color that for low vision people is oftentimes difficult to see. And that's because red is void of black and green is saturated with black. So those two are not good colors. But, you know, what they had was, you know, they were big oval signs on the subway train, and the background was either red or orange or blue with these huge white letters on them. The orange one had black letters, but the blue and the red had the white letters. They were wonderful to see for low vision people, because low vision people do pick out color. Like if you go in a grocery store, you go down the aisle and you look for a color before you zero in on the can that you're looking for. So then when they got the new breed of cars, they changed the signage, and they had these tubular green signs with no back color on them. And they are just awful. They're not. You can't read them at all. So I don't know what to say to you, except that I think some of the low vision people here could tell you that red is very hard for them to see. And you used to have wonderful signs here that were backlit. This was before your time. That were backlit. They were black. They had nice large white letters on them. You know, every time there's something good, it goes away.
Can't get those anymore.
Could I ask the panel this question? We have a problem in Honolulu. And the problem is you're standing at the bus stop, and the first bus pulls up, and then there's three more behind it. And the first one announces its destination, and it's not your bus. And then the first bus pulls out, and so does the second, third, and fourth bus. They don't stop in front of you. They pull up. And so the third bus may have been yours, but you don't know that. What is the solution? Unless in Los Angeles, one bus pulls up at a time.
I'm betting that in San Joaquin they don't have that problem of four buses pulling into the stop at one time.
Only a couple of places.
Do you?
Yeah.
Okay, I know that we do here. If you're at Broadway and 7th in downtown L.A., it's very likely you're going to have three or four buses pull up to the stop at the same time. Our way of dealing with that is that we don't... our rule book states that the operator cannot leave from the third loading position. If you are... we call that first, second, third, fourth loading position. Okay? If you're the first bus in line, you're in first loading position. If you're the second bus in line, you're in second loading position. We don't allow our operators to leave a stop, to depart a stop from the third loading position. In other words, if there's two buses in front of you, you have to wait until they load, then pull up all the way to first loading position and open your door again. And opening the door will trigger that automated announcement. And if it's after the hours that the automated announcement will take place, then the operator is required to announce the stop if it's a multi-line stop, a stop where more than one bus line stops.
Okay, what I was going to ask just about that, do you, in those situations, do you have something on the pavement that identifies where that stop is in terms of the first place where the first bus is to line up and stop there, so it's somewhat predictable, either so that you know there that you're staying in the right spot there, so that when the bus pulls up, it should be close to where the door opens so that you can... if the annunciator's not working, the driver at least can make the announcement?
It's not something that's on the pavement. First position is just considered to be the closest it's possible for the bus to get to the stop sign. But it's not something that's marked on the pavement, no.
That would be helpful to consider transit districts looking at that, because, again, for those of us totally blind, it's the... which sign, what pole is that sign,
right?
If there is one there. Yes, Bernice, go ahead.
Go ahead, Bernice.
Well, I'm sorry. I just wanted to say that in Santa Clara County, the Silicon Valley Council of the Blind had to file a suit. This was some years ago. And we were able to negotiate that they put on each pole that has the bus stop sign on it in raised print and braille. If it's only one bus line that stops there, it says bus stop. If there are multiple buses that stop there, then it actually gives the line numbers that stop there. In Washington, D.C., they handle it a little differently in that, you know, the sidewalk is full of poles. However, the bus stop sign is on a particular kind of pole so that you can tell by feeling it that it's got the bus stop sign on it. It's called a channel pole, and it's not round, but it's... I don't know how to describe it. It goes straight and then it bulges out like a U and then goes back up in curves. And so you always know where the bus stop, you know, where to stand by that you're at the right pole. Is that what I'm trying to say?
I can tell you a
up. Trust me. When you live in West in LA, from La Conte all the way down Westwood Boulevard to Wilshire, there is no way when they're lining up. You're hopefully, you know, your bus driver, because there's so many, and traffic is just totally a mess. And the obstacles, benches, you know it, trash cans, newspaper stands, there's no way you can set up a lineup. I mean, it would be nice in a perfect world, but regretfully, you can't help it. You're hopefully your driver will be, you know, it would be great if they can do it. Or, you know, there's always the red zone for parking. And luckily, if they could find a space where it's, you know, not congested, it would be great. But unfortunately, there are I've been in that situation, and I wish there was a way. I can't even figure out a way. I have to be honest.
I think based on what you're saying, it's true that the most important thing is training that driver, that operator, in customer service and in sensitivity and in taking care of his passengers. And I know Ms. Brown brought up that they have an access advisory committee. We also do, and some of the best ideas for service improvements that we've made have come out of that committee. And there are maybe 18 or 20 people on the committee. It meets once a month. And I know that there are at least five totally blind members of the committee. And so it's true, like Ms. Brown said, it's important to get involved and get your voice heard. And we always welcome people joining that committee and letting us know things that we might not think of.
Just a couple of things I'd like to add. First of all, I'm really pleased to hear that Santa Clara County has the designator on the polls. That's something I've been trying for years, and we're in the process of trying to implement in San Joaquin County. We don't have 18,000 bus stops. We only have about 1,300 bus stops, and so we should be able to do it. Operationally, to designate where a particular bus will stop when there's a multi-use stop is practically impossible because you cannot determine which bus will arrive there first, and there's simply not enough space to allow. Otherwise, the customers would have this huge area where the buses would be laying over, and enough so there's enough room for the bus to always stop in the same place. So you do need... You need the kind of system that Steve was talking about LAMTA has, where a bus can't pull away unless they've stopped at the front stop or one of the first two stops, and then you need enforcement. So I would say video cameras. I just encourage you to give your input so that those issues can be addressed. It's a nightmare for somebody with low vision or somebody who's blind to be standing at a place where there are five buses, because you cannot decipher the announcement, and you can't know which bus is yours. So I would say just work together with them, because operationally you can't assign a spot unless you have lots of room.
Yes, getting back to what Bernice said earlier about the signage, I'm a person of what they call high partial. But I know as far as the colors, she's quite right. I know when I do go to the grocery store, if I'm looking for that red and white can of Campbell's soup, I look for the color of the can before I look for the name, because that's what I see first. When they change the color of a can, I'm lost. You know, I don't know where it's at anymore.
When I moved to the East Coast, I had that problem because the labels are all there.
Yeah, and once a company changes their colors, it's like, I don't know where it's at anymore. But as far as the signage, people with low vision, as far as the colors that you're talking about changing your signage to, I was wondering if you ever consider having a panel of people of a different...
Eye conditions,
yeah, because someone with retinitis pigmentosa sees colors one way. Someone who has macular degeneration or diabetic retinopathy sees colors in a different way. And also the weather conditions, if it's cloudy or bright sunshine, can make a big difference also on what they're able to see on a sign. So I was wondering, when you go to pick out your new colors and all that, if you've considered having someone with different vision help you or assist you or be there as a beta tester, or whatever you call them.
It's a great question.
To see if the signage is actually readable to these people.
Right. I understand exactly what you're saying. I mentioned that on the inside of the bus, there is the LED display that says stop requested or says next stop La Brea and 3rd Street. I remember when we were first getting AVA on board, the company that builds those LED displays shipped one out to us to check out. And we had a bunch of people come down and look at it, and Chip, our ADA compliance officer, said, well, have you guys thought about how visible is this to low vision people? You know, let's get somebody in here. And based on Chip bringing in several people to look at the sign and critique it, we ended up changing the color several times until we had it, you know, to the liking of the majority of people, to where the majority of low vision people said they could see it. And when I said that we have the capability to have those different color head signs, None of those head signs are in use yet. It's just that the company that's making our head signs has given us signs now that have a lot of different possibilities. We can make adjustments to those colors. We can make adjustments to the contrast and the background and all that stuff. As I say, none of them are in use yet, and I'm sure there will be a process like that before we put any of those buses out on the street. It's a very good point. Thank you.
Okay. I guess I'm next. Okay, I have actually two questions. I guess they're related. The first one is I live in San Diego, and we have a real problem with the stops being called out, and my friend in front of me can attest to that. And I was just wondering if we are going to... It just seems like that's a problem with the drivers. That's a problem because you call and complain just down the road in San Diego, and... they take it down, but I'm not sure what they're doing with it. So is there a way that it can be a trickle-down effect to, you know, down to five, as I should say? The other thing is I think this ATMS is a great thing. Is there any way of any plans for implementing it around the country in different states? Thank you.
Well, I can't answer for San Diego. Sorry. They don't listen to me, and they don't take my advice. I can tell you how we handle complaints at MTA, if that's of interest to you. When somebody calls, we have a lot of people who take those calls in our customer relations department, and every one of them is typed into a system and a database with the customer's exact words as far as what happened, why they were unsatisfied. I mean, sometimes people even call and tell us that the driver did something really nice, and that goes in there too. It always goes to the driver's division manager, the one who's directly responsible for that driver's performance. If it's an ADA complaint, it also goes to Chip's office, and Chip will often assign those to me to have retraining done for the operator or even an undercover ride. I think Ms. Brown called it the secret shopper program. We have something very similar where I send out supervisors in plain clothes to verify or confirm whether this operator needs additional training or needs discipline. So we do take your complaints seriously. Every one of them is followed up at MTA. I don't know about San Diego. And as far as your question about ATMS going to other agencies, yeah, it's spreading to mostly larger agencies because they're the only ones who can afford the system. It's very expensive. I know that a number of other agencies, if they're considering purchasing ATMS from the company, it's called Orbital, that makes the software, and Motorola makes most of the hardware that goes with it. But many other agencies that are considering purchasing that system or something similar have come out to visit our control center. There's a group of them there today from Montreal. They're taking a tour of the control center. They're getting on a bus. They're going around the city. They're seeing how the AVA operates. They're seeing how the operator interacts with the system. They're going upstairs to the control center and seeing how the information is displayed up there. So, and that's probably, since we've had the system 2 years ago, that's probably the 10th or 12th company, other transit agency, that's come to see it and help them make their decision about whether they're going to buy something similar.
I think I'm next. Okay. I traveled to Japan approximately 10 years ago and had a great opportunity to see all of Nagoya with a blind person there. What they did there is in front of each bus stop, they had the yellow truncated dome, and you knew exactly that that was a bus stop. They also utilized that same system at the beginning and the end of stairs, so you're well notified about that. They also even, you could take your cane and run it right along a seam to get you right to the train with a truncated dome. And for people like me, I'm unable to read any print. It doesn't matter what color or how large it is. But the bright yellow, I can see. And I think that to put those things where people are getting transportation might be helpful. It might not solve the whole problem, but it would help some of us who are unable to read any signage.
Okay, on our bus stops, when they're on our property, we can do things like that. We have, for instance, on all our rail platforms, they have the truncated domes. But you have to remember that our bus stops, our bus zones, are sidewalks that belong to the city of Los Angeles, city of Santa Monica, city of Beverly Hills, city of Montebello. They're not our property, and we're not allowed to come out and just conform the pavement or the sidewalk to our wishes for our customers. We have to negotiate with each individual city entity, even to paint a curb red or to ask them to remove a parking meter or give us a no parking zone. So for us to do 18,000 bus stops with truncated domes or something similar would be very difficult.
However, your question really is an example of how important and valuable it is to have an accessible advisory committee or members of the community that help the agency make decisions. We have a transit center downtown, which we recently, within the last year, constructed. We used to have a terrible system downtown Stockton where all of the buses stopped at one intersection. And so there were three or four buses on every one of the corners, and the passengers had to cross through the intersection to make their transfers. And we purchased a block, a city block, and converted it into a transfer center with aisles for the buses so that each bus has an assigned berth and the passengers can transfer safely. I say that because we're trying to figure out the best way. We've got a big problem when a couple of times a day we have a large number of passengers. They want to stand right at the edge of the curb of the platforms, the boarding platforms, and the buses can't get up to the curb because the mirror extends out over the curb and you'll hit somebody and hurt them. And so we were thinking about using a truncated dome along the edges of the platform and then posting that you couldn't stand there. But listening to you, I'm wondering whether that may not be the best idea. Maybe we need to identify a boarding area and find a different way to identify the area where we don't want people to stand.
Well,
what Jane was talking about in Japan, is that you would have a square of 2 foot by 2 foot of detectable warnings that's right behind the curb, and then the then there is directional bar tiles that go from the backside of the detectable warnings to, so from the curb perpendicular to the flow of traffic, goes all the way to the face of the building or the backside of the sidewalk. So if you're walking, and it's 24 inches wide, so if you're walking down the sidewalk, and you 1 foot at least would hit the 24-inch line of directional surfaces, and if that's what you're looking for, then you would turn in the direction of the street and then walk there, and it'd stop where the detectable warnings are, and then they have the pole there that's the bus stop pole. I also encountered that in 1984 when I went to Japan. Sacramento Regional Transit with the city of Sacramento had tried that out at 9th and L Street for a few years, and it was very effective. Unfortunately, the city didn't want to continue because of the expense there, and eventually they removed it, but it was something helpful there. Anyone else?
It's just one more piece of evidence that the Japanese are ahead of us in everything.
And they had started that in 1966. Anyone else?
Do you have sensitivity training for your operators, for people, blind people who use service dogs?
At San Joaquin County, yes. Blind persons who use service animals and other disability-related service animal use is covered in our sensitivity training. We do have some members of the community who come and help us with that training by actually demonstrating what their animal performs for them and how they behave on the buses. We do occasionally have problems with people who bring a service animal on board the coach who hasn't been properly trained and doesn't behave in an acceptable manner to be in that setting, and we've never had much trouble taking care of the situation by just interacting with the person and maybe helping them get some training for their animal.
I have a question, MTA. A lot of times, the annunciators, when you get on a bus, they may not be on, or sometimes the driver says, I just get tired of hearing that. And or else they'll say, well, we have the advertisements, and we have to have that on instead of the annunciator. Or it says, it just bothers me when you have both of them on. So how do we alleviate this problem?
Okay, the transit TV,
yeah.
I hate the transit TV. I can't stand that you're bombarded with advertising on the bus. I think you're bombarded with enough advertising everywhere you go. I can't stand the transit TV. That's just my own personal editorial on transit TV. However, transit TV is programmed so that when the annunciator announces, it cuts the volume from transit TV. It cuts off several seconds before the stop announcement happens, and then the volume comes back on. The operators on our buses don't have the ability to turn off the annunciator. If you're on a bus and the annunciator is not working, it's because the annunciator is broken. It's not because the operator turned it off. It can only be turned on or off globally, system-wide, from our control center. The operator does have the ability to adjust the volume, but there's a certain minimum volume he can adjust to and a certain maximum volume, and that's preset by technicians on every bus. And each bus is a little bit different because every bus has a different level of ambient noise on the interior. The newest buses, for instance, the articulateds with the engines all the way 65 feet in the back, and the new Cummins quiet engine and all the soundproofing, they have a very low level of ambient noise. So on that series of bus, the minimum would be set lower, the maximum would be set lower. But the minimum and maximum that the operator can adjust the volume to is set for that series of bus. And operators will sometimes report to us on those forms I mentioned that it's too loud or it's too soft. And when we get those reports, we go out and send a field technician to test the volume, and there's actually a decibel level designated for each series of bus. Okay, the system, as I say, is designed that they cannot turn it off. They can adjust the volume, but they cannot turn it off. They don't have the control over the on and off function.
Any other questions? If not, then I guess, would people be interested in, it's a long one, but a draft of a, and this hasn't been seen by resolutions, on stop announcements, what should be announced? Would one of our people, Maury, Steve, one of you be willing to read this?
I know.
There's a little highlight. It's long. And I ask everyone to indulge, just that this is detailed, but it's something. And if you could start with the yellow, where the yellow highlight would begin there.
If you run out of steam, just hand it over this way.
Okay, thank you. I will if I run out of steam. And if I see people nodding off, I'll hand it over.
Get ready to nod off.
Okay, operate fixed route bus and or passenger rail systems for public use to include in their fixed route stop announcement program all of the following requirements. 1. The fixed route stop announcement program must be an integral part of an overall customer service program to provide safe, reliable, and accessible service to all passengers. 2. The stops that are announced must be consistent, whether it is made manually by the vehicle operator or through an automated voice annunciation system, AVAS. 3. All stops must be announced regardless of the time of day or day of the week. 4. When not technically feasible to announce all stops, use the minimum criteria. A. Stops which serve as transfer points between transit agencies, routes, bus, or rail. B. In order to comply with the ADA requirement to announce stops at major intersections and destinations, 1. Announce stops which serve major attractors, which include shopping centers, medical, social service centers, major educational facilities, government offices, recreational facility areas, etc. 2. Announce stops where the intersection or mid-block location is signalized, controlled, light, stop sign, yield sign, school crossing, etc. C. In order to comply with the ADA requirement to announce stops at sufficient intervals to permit individuals with visual impairments or other disabilities to be oriented to their location, 1. Make an announcement after the first stop after a route makes a turn from one street to another. 2. Make an announcement after the first stop after no stops have been announced for more than 1/4 mile. 3. Make an announcement at any stop which a rider requests the vehicle operator to announce. Be it further resolved, when developing guidelines for a stop announcement program, that consideration be given to 1. Announcing a second street name when intersecting roadways have different names on each side of the intersection. 2. Not announcing the starting point of a line. 3. Using a landmark, for example, convention center, museum, etc., as the stop when there is no cross street at that location. 4. Adding informational nomenclature to street name when appropriate, for example, 16th Street Memorial Auditorium. 5. Combining major destination points and announcements when appropriate, for example, Old Town, Downtown Plaza. 6. Vehicle operators announcing each required stop just after the vehicle departs the prior stop. This gives riders time to activate the stop device to request the stop and to prepare to disembark, and be it further resolved that this...
That's it.
Oh, okay.
That's it.
Gene told me when I was reading that I could say that I didn't author it and haven't yet endorsed it. I'm just reading it. I'm only the vessel.
Thank you. So that was a starting point, and it just opened to getting feedback or a clarification. Yes, is there a question?
Hello. Something I heard in there about not announcing the beginning of the line or something like that?
Yeah, that was where, let's say, the bus is parked there. It's the starting point where you're starting. There doesn't seem feedback I've gotten from people around the country is like, why bother to announce where you just got on? Because the bus starting there didn't come from anywhere else. It's the beginning point of the route. It's not the ending of the route.
Can you give an example of the last example that is on there? I'm not clear. It had to do with prior something.
Okay, just one second. So the last one is vehicle operators announcing each required stop just after the vehicle departs the prior stop. So it would be you're leaving one location, you would immediately announce what the next stop is so that people have time to request the stop, gather their belongings, and be prepared to get off. And that's one of the issues, actually. If you're in a congested area, one of the issues with calling every stop, if you're in a congested area where the stops are very close to one another, in the course of doing the announcements, a person could be disadvantaged by not being prepared to get off. You might be better off to announce them a little further apart and just have people know which one is their stop.
Also, I've been told by some drivers in Sacramento on the 30 bus line that runs through the main part of town.
I used to drive that.
Well, you have my empathy. It's probably the most stressful, one of the most stressful routes there for a driver. Constant pull in and out. It's a very narrow street, a lot of traffic. And the operators have told me that it was probably one of the things that helped them maintain their schedule. Because if they gave warning in advance, then people started gathering their belongings and got off. And rather than just waiting until they pulled up and then started, and then they had to wait. And that's a route that they're under a great deal of pressure to keep on moving. Did that clarify?
Yeah, thank you.
Okay. Any other questions?
Yes.
Yes, I would like to add something. Sorry. Do
you want to go? Okay. All right. First, I want to thank Jean very much for the effort that went into the initial draft resolution, and I want to applaud that the starting point of it is to announce all of the stops. I think that this is an issue that I've been concerned with for a long time and gathered a lot of data as well as in similar ways that Jean has. And I think the difference between in the effort required on the part of the Transportation Committee, it seems to me, based on the description we heard here today about how this is achieved, that the difference between announcing some of the stops versus all the stops is minimal compared to the value that the consumer gets out of that difference, if that makes sense. Anyway, thank you for that strong foundation of resolution. And my question about it is that could we include some kind of criteria for one statement? One statement refers to in instances where it's impossible for the service provider to announce all of the stops, then you give several guidelines for what should be followed at that point. It would be nice to have some kind of criteria, examples of what constitutes they're unable to do it. Basically, is being unwilling that I don't think being unwilling is the same thing as being unable, and I think we have to kind of at least make some suggestion. This is all rife with vagueness. That's what we're dealing with. People come here, and we can always look at how cloudy issues are and how vague they are. But making some suggestion that there needs to be some good cause that, and probably there are some measurable causes that they can't call all the stops. I think that would be my only suggestion for adding to the resolution.
I'll bring it up to the Resolutions Committee tonight. Also, you're welcome to attend the Resolutions Committee and bring it up when it's discussed in the Santa Barbara room. That's the reason I put when it's not technically feasible, so that it wouldn't be because the driver is not willing to do it or the transit agency. It would be because technology may not have it. It's not possible because the stops are maybe too close to one another, so that if they just made the announcement, they'd be practically on top of the next stop. And that was the reason I used technically infeasible. But please, I'll bring it up, but please come to the meeting tonight after the general session and express that concern.
Can I say a word?
Yes, go ahead.
Lori's going to meet. I just wanted to clarify and follow up on what you both just said. For instance, in San Joaquin County, we have some routes. Most of our operators work approximately 10 hours a day. Our shifts are structured so that they're approximately 10 hours, 5 days a week. So 50 hours is what most work. And so if some of the routes, being city routes, they're going to stop about every other block throughout their entire 1 hour one direction, 1 hour the other direction. By the end of a 10-hour day, they would not be able to speak. It would be very, very difficult to announce every single stop and answer the questions and drive the coach safely. And so there are some challenges to announcing every stop.
Okay. There was somebody there in the front, I think.
Yes. Council, I want to point out that this is just for Lake County or for all the counties in California or
What are you talking
about? The resolution.
Oh, the resolution. This is something to be brought. If the resolutions committee approves it in some form, this will be brought to the membership, and this would be then, if it, the membership passes this, it would be basically a first step of a position for CCB that could then be given to every individual in the organization, every chapter, and you can then take it to your transit agency and say, this is our position, the California Council of the Blind, on this. So it could be used there. It's something you go there because I have been asked, I'm certain everyone in this audience has been dealing with the transit agency, has been asked, does your organization have a position? And we don't have one at this time, nor does ACB have one. So this is the first attempt to put something in writing that can be given out to interested parties and for groups to advocate for this. Just one side thing there, too, is one thing, and I heard somebody clap in agreement. I assume it was agreement. It was about not only that all stops to be announced, regardless of the time of day or day of the week. During one of the deliberations with APTA's working group in here, there's some transit districts that were thinking that they would only make announcements during peak times and off-peak times. There was no need for them. Some felt that, yeah. So that you so
nobody travels during off-peak time.
Yeah,
we all know
no,
that.
And it was explained to them that was a violation of the ADA, just right there, a lack of information, especially when the visual component was being provided. And the other point is that that whatever you have, everyone seemed to be in agreement that whether the driver, if there's a list, let's say the transit company, well, like Sacramento Regional Transit right now does not announce every stop officially, they're the company itself. But there's the thing is to have that if the operator makes the announcements on the PA system or if it's a bus with the automated is clever devices in Sacramento, that they're the same announcements. Because what's the been problem going on that sometimes the drivers make more announcements than the annunciator, sometimes the annunciator makes more stops announcements, and it's because the lists are not the same, so that's something else why I put in here to be consistency in what's announced by regardless whether it's an annunciator or the driver. Other questions, concerns, or suggestions? Okay. Then I guess I'll take it that the, at least there's we're on the right path about this resolution. And anyone else have a final question that they'd like to ask our two panelists? Bernice, would you?
Pardon? I see no hands.
Okay. Bernice, would you like to say anything?
No.
Okay. Well, then I
say thank you to our two speakers.
Yes, very much. Let's give them a hand of applause.
Thank
for
you.
Giving
it was
up
great
their
to be
time.
Here.
And then I guess we'll say have a good morning and a good convention, and we'll see you later. That's it for today. Thank you.